got to introduce your journal. There you go. That better? Morning, everybody. It's a great pleasure and privilege to talk to you today about one of my favourite subjects, two of my favourite subjects, both God and science. We might go for the other mic then, Matt. Yeah. I'd rather walk around because I, as a teacher, I do walk around when I'm talking when I'm talking to my classes and things. And today we're talking about science and God. And where's that clicker? And science, if you listen to the latest, you would think that there is a real debate between God and science. There's been lots of books published on this thing, and I often get asked by students, how can you be a Christian and believe in science, or how can you be a science teacher and believe in God, as if the two just don't go together. And so, I think I'm walking in front of something over there. And so there's all these things that have been published in the past, a whole bunch of atheists who put all their things talking about science has killed God, and the religion is no need for it anymore. Let's turn this completely off. And so there's a whole bunch of other material that's being presented by both sides of the argument. And so one would think that there's a real debate between science and religion. And if you look at what a lot of people think of, it's common belief out there, including amongst a whole bunch of scientists, is that science is factual, faith is blind. Science is unbiased. Faith is the enemy of reason. You can't be a reasonable person and have faith in a God. It's the authoritative answer to everything. And there's scientists who put forward this view that science can answer every question, and that faith is no longer necessary, and in fact it's harmful, it's a hindrance, and there's a lot of those atheistic scientists out there who actually remove religion from everything, and they say, oh, we are being indoctrinated by believing in God, and these children should not learn about God, they should just learn about science because it can answer everything. So let's have a look at the sort of questions that science can answer. If I ask a scientist for a scientific explanation of the boiling of water, I might talk about the molecules moving around, they're attracted to one another, and then you put some energy in and then they escape and start to turn to steam at the boiling point. Science can answer the what and the how really, really well. Through the scientific method, which starts with observations, come up with a theory, you make predictions, and you test it with an experiment, and so on. And science is really good at honing in on good details. And science has done fantastic things. It's brought us medicine, it's brought us lots of engineering products. However, there's things that science can't answer, and that is the who and the why. Why are we here? Well, in the case of the boiling of water, the who could be my wife. What's a cup of tea? That's why. Now, is this explanation a silly explanation? Why the kettle's boiling? No. It's not actually a competing explanation. It's not contradictory. It actually is a complementary explanation. That's the who and the why. The science can answer the how and the what. But my wife wanted a cup of tea. So therefore, that's an explanation. And it's not a silly explanation. It complements. So is there anything wrong with us studying science? Is God saying, oh no, look, you shouldn't be studying science. Look, these guys have discovered how lightning works. Oh no, what am I going to impress them with now? No. The more I study this, the more I am impressed with God. Because I can see the fine tuning, the detail he's put into all these fantastic things. In fact, it was the likes of some of the pioneers of modern science, starting with Galileo, who you may have known that studied the heavens and looked at the orbits of things around the sun. It was his belief in God and belief in the order of the universe that there should be patterns, and he wanted to know how that was put together. Another guy by the name Kepler, this guy even more precise with his mathematics and physics of the cosmos, and this guy broke into praise with his writings all the time. He was just he's thinking God's thoughts after him. That's how he put it. And a whole list of others, a whole list of scientists who are well-known and established 40 schools every day in science, these guys are all believers in God. This one was not so much a believer in God, Einstein. Some people think he was, but he definitely wasn't. He said the most incomprehensible thing about the universe is that it's comprehensible. That's a bizarre thing to say. Why? Because he knew that a universe was just randomly made out of nothing would actually not be, you wouldn't be able to comprehend it. Why would there be a pattern? If I throw a ball, why does it follow a particular pattern? Why do things follow predictable laws? Why can we even do science at all? The reality is, it follows predictable patterns and well-established laws that we can describe perfectly mathematically. And so, this astounded Einstein. And these are modern-day scientists, people who are living now. You've got the head of the Human Genome Project, one of the highest points any biologist could have, respected positions. A couple of Nobel Prizes in physics, and the list goes on, of a whole bunch of well-respected scientists who are Christians. And so the debate cannot then be science versus God, because clearly science is good, and clearly there are some great scientists who are Christians. So what is the debate really? It's naturalism versus theism. What's naturalism? Some people call it scientism or the new atheism. It's basically putting, using science as an excuse for not believing in God. Carl Sagan put it very well here. Cosmologist, you may have seen or heard of. There was supposed to be some sound with that, but Matt obviously hasn't turned it on. The quote just finished, that's fine. The cosmos is all that is, all it ever was, and all it ever will be. That's naturalism, that the universe is just all there is, and you know, science will eventually be able to explain the whole lot. If you look, take this to the Urban Dictionary, some of you may have seen this, bit of tongue-in-cheek. The belief, atheism, the belief that there was nothing, and nothing happened to nothing, then nothing magically exploded for no reason, created anger for everything, and then a bunch of everything magically rearranged itself for no reason whatsoever into self-replicating bits, which then turned into dinosaurs. So let's have a look at what modern science does tell us. This is about 1930s. It's actually a priest who actually first came up with this idea. Oh, well, it didn't just come up with it. It was based on evidence. And scientists now have made such precise measurements that we can figure out the universe actually had a beginning. Now, we go, yeah, before that, scientists actually thought the universe, well, there was debate over whether it had a beginning or it was just eternal. Einstein didn't like the idea of a beginning universe because he knew what that meant. He liked the idea of the universe would just static and stay the same. And then they discovered that the universe is actually expanding. It's getting bigger. It actually started from a point, and it was a whole bunch of energy and a whole bunch of light. Well, we've been able to tell you that all along. God said, let there be light. And there was light. And it had a beginning. By faith, we understand that the universe was formed at God's command so that what is seen was not made out of what is visible. Going back to this again, you'll also see God would sit outside of time. We know God can see the beginning from the end. Scientists know that the universe, this whole fabric of space-time, we call it, is space and time in one. So at the beginning, there was no space, there was no time, there was absolutely nothing. Nothing at all. And so God sits outside of that nothingness, outside of his space and time, and can interject wherever he wants. And you notice the universe actually expanding. It's actually speeding up and it's expanding. The universe, to current day, expanding, spreading out or stretching out. Now, you're probably not going to be able to read all these, but this, a Bible reference here from Job. He alone stretches out the heavens. Psalm, he stretches out the heavens like a tent. Keep going. He stretches out the heavens. We've known that all along. God, in the beginning, said there was it was nothing, and he said let there be light, there was light, and he stretched out the heavens. The heavens declare the glory of God, the sky proclaim the work of his hands. If that's true, then there should be evidence for it. Let's see what there is. There's a local galaxy to us, that is Andromeda. Firstly, a little bit of just so you can see where this is going. What is a light year? Well, a light year is more hornets and fewer bills. Right? Now, with a hyphen, a light year is a unit of distance. It is the distance that light travels in 1 year. The speed of light is about 300,000 kilometers per second. And how many kilometers is that? It is about, when you multiply all that, that's 9.46 times 10 to the power of 12. That's probably about a trillion. It is 9.5 million kilometers for 1 light year. That's how far light will travel in 1 year. So these are stars within 12 light years of our sun, there's a few of them. Within 20 light years, there's a few more. Within 50 light years, there's a few more. You might have the lights off for some of this. Going out a bit, within 250 light years. Oh, that's what it was. 5,000 light years of the sun. You can actually start to see these bands. These are the stripes of our galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy. Right? And then you come out to the Milky Way. Now, if you were travelling at the speed of light, 300,000 kilometers per second, it would take you 100,000 years to get from one side of the galaxy to the other. That's how big it is, just our galaxy. Now, obviously that can't be a real photo, right? Because there's no selfie sticks long enough. So. Keep going out. You've got a couple other galaxies. That's that little scale there, 1 million light years. You've got some local galaxies, the Andromeda, the one I showed you the photo before. Now you start to see these groups of galaxies. That there, can we get this? That there's our local group. About 1 million light years across. Right. Keep going out, you get these clusters of galaxies. Notice they form along these little groups here. This becomes important in a moment. You've got these superclusters, and then the universe, probably about, the radius about 13.8 billion years, light years. So, and this is what we can observe. Now, notice there's a bit of lumpiness there. That is actually where the galaxies are attracting one another gravitationally and actually forming these galaxies. If the lumpiness wasn't right, if there wasn't this sort of thing just right, you wouldn't actually have galaxies, you wouldn't have stars, you wouldn't have the chemical elements. You might have hydrogen and helium, the two lightest things, but you wouldn't have anything that could make life. This here is the Hubble Deep Field. You might have heard of the Hubble Space Telescope. What they did is they decided to point to the darkest patch of sky they could find, and then go to the darkest part of that image and zoom in on that, and then the darkest part of the image, zoom in on that, darkest part of that image, zoom in on that. So they're basically pointing at nothing. In a significant part of the sky, a tiny, tiny, tiny little dot in the sky. And they exposed this for a few weeks, and they came up with this image. Now, none of those are in our own galaxy. It's bypassing stuff in our own galaxy. In that photo, there's about 1,500 galaxies in an insignificant speck in the sky. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. So we have this fine-tuning argument, which was sort of alluded to in that video. So the fine-tuning, talking about our own planet and stuff, yeah, there might be lots of other stars, billions of stars out there, the chances it might be heightened. However, there's only one universe. There's this thing called the cosmological constant. It's to do with the stretching of space. If that wasn't tuned, if it wasn't tuned to one part in 10 to the power of 120, like one with 120 zeros, one part in that, then either it was too small, the universe would have collapsed back in on itself before any galaxies could form. Any bigger than that, it would spread out too quickly and nothing could have formed either. There's a whole bunch of other ones, the lumpiness of the universe, resonance in carbon and oxygen nuclei. Without these precise tuned values that these occur in stars, there would be no oxygen, there would be nothing above helium. Like helium is the second lightest element, it wouldn't have anything more complex than that. No life. Gravitational constant just right, and the list goes on, and there's dozens and dozens of these things. And so, this is so profound. It's only one universe, right? This guy, Stephen Hawking, you may have heard of, probably the most publicly known scientist at the moment, and He says the remarkable fact is the values of these numbers seem to have been very finely adjusted to make possible the development of life. So much so, in fact, that many scientists, including Stephen Hawking, have come to the realisation there must be an infinite number of universes, and we just, you know, there must have been one that was made that had, you know, if you may have an infinite number of them, then one thing's got to be right. So that's, here we are. And this is what he subscribes to. In fact, he says,
he really doesn't disprove God, but it makes them unnecessary. It predicts that the universe will be spontaneously created out of nothing, without the need for a creator.
That's it, out of nothing. This guy, Alan Sandage, he worked alongside Hubble, less known, but amongst the scientific community, very well known and very well respected. At the age of 50, said this. He was an atheist. It was my science that drove me to the conclusion that the world is much more complicated than can be explained by science. It's only through the supernatural can I understand the mystery of existence. He was an atheist, became a Christian at the age of 50 because of his science. So we've got two different views. We're going to look at DNA in a moment. Two different views. This guy goes, yeah, we've just figured out how DNA works. We don't need any myths to explain it anymore. And then this other person says, look, we just have to figure out how DNA works. What an amazing design. It's the same evidence. It's just a different worldview. This guy is thinking, no more gaps there. He's closing up gaps. Go, oh, well, we don't need anything to explain it. We know there was a gap there. Now we know it. Right? And it's sad that a lot of believers in God have this idea that, oh, God is just there for the gaps. That's not why I believe in God, just to fill gaps. These guys, Watson and Crick, you may have heard of, these guys got the Nobel Prize for the discovery of DNA. Both atheists. Crick says the origin of life seems to be almost a miracle, many other difficulties of it occurring. But then in the next statement, he says, biologists must constantly keep in mind that what they see is not designed, rather evolved. Now, that is not a scientific statement, that is a philosophical statement. He's a scientist, but not speaking of science. He's speaking of his own worldview. Richard Dawkins, you may have heard this guy. He's a very, very aggressive atheist, wants to get rid of anything to do with religion from schools. He wrote the book, The God's Delusion, and has debated Christians in the past. Biology is the study of complicated things that have the appearance of having been designed with a purpose. Just the appearance. So what's he looking at?
Computer animation based on molecular research. We are now able to see how DNA is actually copied in living cells.
DNA.
You are looking at an assembly line of amazing miniature biochemical machines that are pulling apart the DNA double helix and cranking out a copy of each strand. The DNA to be copied enters the production line from bottom left. The whirling new molecular machine is called helicase. It spins the DNA as fast as a jet engine as it unwinds the double helix into two strands. One strand is copied continuously. It can be seen spooling off to the right. Things are not so simple for the other strand because it must be copied backwards. It is drawn out repeatedly in loops and copied one section at a time. The end result is two new DNA molecules.
This is an amazing miniature factory. Now, this is nothing compared to some of the other videos. For time's sake, I won't, but I'll put links to them for you on the website. This is just the structure, but what's not shown there is the fact that it's a code. It's a written code. It's actually a language. And it's the same code and structure and language. All this molecular machinery used from microbes up to the most complex living things using exactly the same language. This guy, Carl Weiss, is another atheist, and he said you put a gorilla at a computer, and the computer had every known language, every symbol of every language, all the numbers, all the letters, all the other symbols, at the thing, from every language at the computer, and you've got a gorilla typing there, he said, The chances for the spontaneous assembly of a replicator pool I described above can be compared to those of a gorilla composing in English a coherent recipe for the preparation of chili con carne. It's nonsense. Yet he rejects a creator. Bill Gates. DNA is like a computer program, but far, far more advanced than any software ever created. Now that takes intelligence to do that. What do we know? But since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse. Whoops. People without excuse. That is a really important point. These guys have seen how much evidence there is, and they reject a creator. They're without excuse, more so, because they can see it. So we've got two revelations here. We've got revelation in Scripture and revelation through creation. God reveals himself to us. This guy, English philosopher, an atheist, and up until relatively recently, like in the last just over 10 years, was debating Christians in the public arena at the age of 81. Now I believe there's a God. He thinks the intelligence, he does point to a creative intelligence almost entirely because of the DNA evidence. He became a believer in God and a few years later decided Christianity was the one through other research. So, all these parameters, did God just at the beginning, okay, the creator, put everything into existence and then off it goes, it's like winding up a toy. And then all those parameters, set them, off you go, universe to itself. Well, a whole bunch of parameters here, and these are things that are useful to students, physics students in their exams. So I give them a card with all these numbers on it that represent all these things that they can do calculations on exams. And on the other side, I give them a little Jesus thing with that verse on it. However, is this, did it just pop into existence and that was the end? Did he just set the universe running and that was it? And did the universe just come out of nothing? And just pop into existence? No, it didn't. We have more from the Bible. That's where the slide is. In him, all things hold together. Not just they were made, but they all hold together on him. Constantly, still, he's sitting there watching his creation and interacting with his creation. So where does it leave us in terms of purpose? Why are we here? Why is there something rather than nothing? Why is there us? Well, if you believe in science alone, without any creator, this is what you come up with. We are the product of random chance, and there should be no reason you should make sense out of anything. If you read the Bible, God created us in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them. It's a very, very different story. We are not a product of random chance. We are created and loved by a creator who just wants to, he's made his creation for his own glory, and he's made us for his own glory so we can love him back. I love science by studying the universe and other structured things within it. And a deep sense of creator that the revelation has given me through understanding what he's made. I'll leave you with this last thing. The cosmos is all that is, or ever was, or ever will be. Contrast that with this. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty, who was, and is to come. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, thank you that you have created this universe, but more importantly, you've created us as important.